it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 449. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, lots to get to on the podcast. Starting to get some momentum towards the Phillies actually doing something. Lots of JT Realmuto rumors in the last week, Didi Gregorius rumors, and the Phillies made a big signing, which, of course, Justin and Liz talked about on the latest episode of Continued Success, the RG Bradley signing. We'll just dip our toe into that a little bit. And Major League Baseball also says that the seven-inning doubleheaders and the extra-inning rules from last year will continue here in 2021, so we'll talk about all that coming up here in the next few minutes with my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. You know Liz, of course, from Yahoo Sports. You follow her on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How's it going?
I'm doing fine, John. How are you doing today?
Doing great. We don't normally podcast during the afternoon,
but
with my... With my current unemployment status and it being Martin Luther King Jr. Day, everybody has the day off. So we're broadcasting in daylight, which is not something that I'm used to, but really enjoying it so far. And if you hear my children yelling outside the door, that's because they're right outside the door. So we'll be making our way through the podcast this afternoon while we're all on the clock. And Justin Clue, of course, from Baseball Prospectus, you follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. How you doing, pal?
Pretty good. Hey, happy anniversary to Scott Rolen avoiding arbitration and signing the largest contract in Phillies team history for $8.6 million in 1 year, which, you know, it stands out because of how very hard he fought any attempt by the Phillies to get him to sign a contract for more than 1 year. Just another great day in Philadelphia offseason history.
No doubt. I mean, it's... That whole Scott Rolen thing, it's such a shame the way that all went down. I think the Phillies had a lot of blame to go around there, but of course, I think Rolen also just didn't want to be here.
You know,
he didn't want to play in Philadelphia. Even if they'd have given him like $20 jillion, he wouldn't have played in Philadelphia.
Wasn't a great match.
No, it was not. All right, well, listen, we've got some good stuff to get into, and one guy that everybody wants to come back is, of course, the guy we've talked about all offseason long, and that's JT Realmuto. And we found out over the weekend that the Phillies have apparently made an offer, a concrete offer to JT Realmuto, 5 years, reportedly just over $100 million. We don't know exactly how far over $100 million. Jason Stark from The Athletic reporting this news. If you're looking for a contract that's going to beat out Buster Posey's average annual value of $23 million a season, then it needs to be at least $115 million, although I don't know if the Phillies really care about that. But you look at all of the ways that this has gone down over these last couple of months and the way the catching market has moved towards the Phillies, Justin, and seeming the momentum that we're starting to hear is the Phillies the clear favorite. I only see really two teams as being realistic options for JT Realmuto at this point, the Blue Jays, and I think the Nationals still have an outside chance of getting involved in this thing. But really, so much of the momentum, at least on the surface, appears to be heading towards the Phillies and a reunion with JT Realmuto. So after hearing the news, after hearing the potential contract, where are you on JT Realmuto's return to Philadelphia in 2021?
My positivity is unshaken at this point.
Good for you.
If not fortified. To be honest, listening to the Phillies talk about this the past few weeks, you know, when they talked about, oh, maybe there's nothing we have to do, we don't feel a whole lot of immediacy on this. And earlier in the offseason, it kind of came across as almost ignorance or just annoying that, like, well, why not? You know, there's going to be other teams out there that want this guy. We've had plenty of reports and many teams that could afford him saying, like, oh yeah, well, if he's not going to be on the Phillies, then let's form a queue here and see who can come up with the best offer. And now it seems like when they talk about, well, there's no real immediate way to do this. And now with the context of a couple of teams falling away or it being reported that if some things happen that are more likely to happen for a team like the Yankees, if they work things out with LeMahieu, then like maybe they're out of the JT Realmuto market because they wouldn't want to pay for him as well. Yeah, you're right. The list has kind of shrunk a great deal, and I think the Phillies can speak. At this point, I'm crediting them with some confidence. Like they seem to be speaking from a perspective of, okay, we know we can, and obviously they knew before anybody else did, probably, which teams were going to be real threats and which teams weren't, and if they were truly not threatened by anybody this whole time, and for that reason felt like they didn't have to move with much immediacy. The worst case scenario was he signs with another team and then they don't have to pay for him, which is also something they kind of don't want to do anyway. So In a sense, it was almost win-win, except for the actual wins on the baseball field that they would lose if they didn't have JT Realmuto on the team.
Right.
So I feel good. I feel confident about this. I think it's still going to move very slowly. I mean, look what we got. We got the new thing. The new thing is the Phillies have an offer for him. They didn't give us an exact number, right? At least not initially. Jason Stark was like, it's a 9-figure number. That was about as close as we could get. But
yeah,
we don't need details. We just need, to know he's coming back at this point. 5 years, I can stomach a 5-year deal. You know,
that's sure.
We've talked about that as well. That's kind of what these deals entail. So, my confidence is unshaken. I feel good. And I can't wait for the next update on this process because I'm hoping it'll be good.
And Liz, I know we've talked about how we didn't think this would happen until February, a deal, but I don't know. I feel like the market has firmed up more so than I think we thought it would have by this point, for catchers at least, anyway. Like, I know George Springer is still out there, but with DJ LeMahieu going off the board and the Yankees signing him or re-signing him, that pretty much takes them out of the running. You know, you've got teams like the Astros, who are not going to give up any more draft picks in order to sign a big-time free agent, given how many draft picks they've lost in past years due to signing free agents and with the sign-stealing controversy. And, you know, you've got other teams that have made other signings this offseason that seemingly have taken them out of the running, including the Mets, especially the Mets. So, you know, I've been optimistic. I think I've said from the beginning of the offseason that I thought that they were going to bring Realmuto back. And it sounds like the way Dombrowski talks is that he really feels like that there's a good chance they'll bring him back. He said at a news conference today introducing Archie Bradley, he said, I think everybody knows that you'd like to bring him back. That's not a secret. So no, I don't feel any extra pressure in that regard. He was referring to the fact that Archie Bradley at his news conference is talking about wanting to re-sign JT Realmuto. So he says, we want to do everything we can to make our club better, and I think we've expressed our desires in doing so, and we'll do our best in that regard, but I don't feel any extra pressure. I don't blame the players. We feel the same way as they do. We're on the same page. Pretty good stuff. Just feels to me like momentum really is building towards JT Realmuto coming back.
I am more positive than I've ever been. I don't know how far ahead that's moved me in general. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it does feel like the momentum has shifted, but, you know, everything Dombrowski says sort of has a caveat attached to it. Mm-hmm. Like, I hope they'll do it. It sounds like they're getting ready to do it, but I won't believe it until I see it. Like, I'm just sort of, you know, until they do it, I don't know why I would give them any credit for anything.
No, for sure. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, they've got to do it. You know, they got to put their money where their mouth is, literally put their money where their mouth is right now. And I think, Liz, I know it freaked you out a little bit this week. It freaked everybody else out a little bit this week when suddenly Andrew Knapp was appearing on MLB Network radio on Sirius XM talking about how he's preparing himself to play every day. It's like, sure, I don't blame Andrew Knapp for saying what he said, but why on earth is he getting interviewed?
Saying it? whose idea was this?
Yeah.
Why? Other than someone who is plugged into the baseball community would do that, but it still feels really, why?
Is he a household name outside of Philadelphia?
No. Oh, that's old Andrew Knapp. You know, Andrew. In Philadelphia.
No, right. Yeah, no, it was definitely bizarre. I mean, maybe it could just be because JT Realmuto's name is in the news so much this offseason. It could be an interesting perspective to take a look at who would start if he doesn't come back to Philadelphia and interview that person. But again, I don't know that we are doing that necessarily for the outfielder that would replace George Springer or for the second baseman that would replace DJ LeMahieu, you know? So it's catcher's definitely also kind of a more pivotal position both defensively and offensively, but Justin, it was a little bit strange to hear from Andrew Knapp this week, but I, you know, again, I think for all the world, it certainly looks as though JT Realmuto and the Phillies are more of a perfect match here. But if you had to look at Blue Jays or Nationals, or is there another team that you think, who do you think could be the Phillies' most stringent competition for him at this moment?
Well, at this point, I would say the Nationals. But even their moves this offseason have indicated that they're pretty interested in beefing up that lineup. And I mean that almost literally. Like they're putting a lot of beef in there. And Realmuto's not exactly on par, I would say, the kind of player that Kyle Schwarber and Josh Bell are, but obviously he's a big offensive contributor. And if the Nationals are trying to stack things up near and around Juan Soto, then obviously there's fewer catchers who are going to provide you the kind of defense Realmuto can, gun down base runners the way he can, run a pitching staff the way he can, while also contributing offensively. I mean, obviously that's your guy, but that's also the reason why he's trying to make as much money as he's trying to make. And I think, you know, Nationals haven't really risen to the occasion as far as being one of those teams that's going to go out during this particular offseason, start throwing briefcases full of cash at everybody. I feel like they've gone about this somewhat strategically, that they've pinpointed certain people to play certain roles to adhere to the people they believe are going to be their core moving forward. It's just tough to imagine Realmuto not being a fit for anybody who's interested in them. You know, maybe if somebody out there who's got a promising young catcher like on the rise who they see great things for, like, okay, this is somebody we want to play with our guy for a while. But it's just, yeah, it's tough to imagine that for 20 out of 30 teams, at least, Realmuto wouldn't be like, if not financially, just, you know, eyeball test. That's a great catcher we could have on our team. That being said, the Nationals aren't, it's not crazy to see them making a move like this. The Blue Jays kind of crack me up because I feel like they're just so often in the list of names, but never the one name that at the end of the day is the team.
It was like the White Sox a couple of years ago with the Machado and the Harper signings.
Exactly. And it was the Blue Jays. Well, we tried. Sorry, guys. All right. Well, back to the Rogers Center. Same old crew. That's why I feel like the Nationals are probably a more realistic threat here. It's the same kind of threat that the Mets presented, in that it's a team that we would be facing 19 times a season. You'd get plenty of exposure as to being on the receiving end of all the value we'd see in JT Realmuto, kind of like we were before when he was on the Marlins. And on top of that, he makes a good team better in Washington. You know, yeah, they scuffled a bit this year, but I think they do still have plenty of young talent to remain some kind of threat moving forward in Trey Turner, Juan Soto. You know, there's guys there who are going to hurt you, and adding JT Realmuto to that mix is going to do that as well. So, and at catcher, they have Yan Gomes in 2020, he had a decent year. He made it into 30 games. You know, he played in half the games, so he was fine. Yeah. And their other catcher just went to LA, so I could see him being a fit there as a, you know, just because of what they need and because of what they're trying to do. You know, get better. So of the teams available that could still give the Phillies a run for their money, I would say the Nationals, but I'm encouraged by the fact that I haven't really seen them pop up a whole lot, if at all, in these like Realmuto conversations we've had this winter. So even that doesn't super alarm me as much as the idea of him going there does.
So with the lack of teams that it seems like JT Realmuto has left to choose from, Liz, you know, there doesn't seem to be not as obvious a fit as with Philadelphia. Is that why you think the Phillies maybe don't need to see this be resolved immediately? Or do you think with an offer like that, a 5-year offer, nine figures on the table, I mean, I wonder how much room there is for negotiation there. But, and also Dombrowski at this news conference with Archie Bradley said he had a pulse on what the payroll was going to look like this year, but wouldn't offer any specifics. You know, it doesn't sound like there's going to be a whole lot more offers out there that would be higher than what the Phillies sound like that they have been willing to offer so far. So is that why, do you feel like they maybe don't feel like there's a real need for this to be resolved immediately, or are you feeling a sense of urgency from the Phillies right now?
I don't necessarily feel any urgency. You know, there's still a lot of time left before spring training.
Right.
Until we get closer to that. I don't think that anyone's going to feel any urgency. Like, there's no reason for Realmuto to speed things along unless he's desperate to do so. But, like, nothing would change for him, materially, other than you know, he'll know where he's going for spring training. So I don't think there's, no one feels any urgency right now. Everyone's just waiting. I think they're someone's waiting to see what will happen with George Springer. Because, you know, there have been a couple of signings this year, but it's hard to sort of figure out where the market is going.
Yeah. So at this point, what is your confidence level on JT Realmuto coming back? Like 100% he's coming back, 1%, 0% he's not coming back, Liz?
I feel like maybe 60%.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my level of confidence, I think.
All right, Justin, where are you?
That's high. So the context of what we consider high levels of confidence are also affecting this guy. I was going to say 51%.
Oh, I was looking for something slightly over 50% and thought they're going to call me negative.
No,
if I don't choose something higher than 60.
No, I fully. When you said
pressure, I'm bowing to it, and you're not even giving it to me.
When you said you were feeling more positive, I was like, oh, that puts her up at about a 20 to 30%. Confidence.
Oh my!
But
that's
great.
Realistically, I'm hovering somewhere between the 45 and 55% range. Like some days I'm just like, this is absolutely not happening, and you know, other moments I'm just like, I could see this happening. Sometime it's going to happen, and I'm going to be really happy.
It's like funny. I first of all, I was saying 51% because it's, you know, it's the majority is confident, but it's the lowest amount of majority confidence because I'm still, you know. Don't hurt me for believing. The other thing is it's the confidence is affected, and I don't know what this tells you, but by just the fact that the Phillies have, like, they talk about him, that they say his name out loud, say things like, we want him, we hope we want to get him back, and it's like we've talked for weeks on these shows about how whether or not that's even true, because part of the interesting part of this is the giant PR hit this team would take if JT Realmuto went somewhere else. How many times we'd have to read that the Phillies gave up a top prospect for him and that he looked really good in 2020 and that the Phillies just have nothing to show from that trade. And everything that kind of feeds into that. There's a reason this has been the primary through line for every discussion about the Phillies we've had for the past calendar year, it feels like, because so much about this team moving forward feeds through it. That's just a fact. So I like the fact that they're talking about him like he exists. They're not ignoring it. They're not shut
it's not
down.
Voldemort. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
The catcher that dare not speak its name. You know, they're saying his name.
They can't obviously say we definitely want him back and we're willing to pay him this money. JT, if you see this, that's our offer. Give us a call. Like, obviously that's not going to happen, but like about as close as you can get to that without, you know, giving away your position or whatever is just saying like, yeah, JT is a guy. We like JT. Nobody has chided the players, either, you know, the ones who've been here for a few years and Bryce Harper or the guy who literally just got here 3 days ago, Archie Bradley, for saying, you know, sign JT in public and being really public with their desire to want him back. You know, no one's telling them to shut up because maybe there's a genuine effort in place to get him back. And if we don't get him back, we will view it as a failure, not as a whoopsie daisy. And, you know, I'm putting a lot of words in their mouth here, but I'm just saying that's what it starts to feel like. And I think that's where the confidence comes from.
I'll tell you, and you guys know, I've probably been more confident than the both of you on this happening. And I feel like I would now be more surprised if he doesn't come back than if he does by a lot. Like, I'm at like 75% confident that he comes back. You know, you just see so much momentum heading in that direction. But I tell you, that number would not be as high as it is if it wasn't Dave Dombrowski making the decisions here. If it was still Matt Klentak making the decisions, I'd still probably be in the 30s.
I honestly feel like I got to add, too, that if they – one of the signs that it shows that they'll consider it a failure to not get him back is that all of this stuff that we're citing as reasons to be confident, you know, it all still counts as a failure if they don't get him. It's not like they'll be able to turn back to the fan base and say like, well, hey, look, we were actually trying. Mm-hmm. And people will go like, okay, well, you tried. And like that.
Right.
How much are the season tickets? Like, just give them over to me. It's fine. Andrew Knapp, give me his jersey. Like, that's not going to happen. So it's not getting him, whether you make it clear that you tried or not, will be viewed as a failure. So you kind of, I guess if this all is an act, then it's for no reason, I guess is my point.
Think about the PR hit that they'll take. Because you mentioned Andrew Knapp again, and I'm thinking MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM had the guy that no one knows, the guy that is not well known on their show to talk about, you know, essentially being JT Realmuto's replacement. That is how much everyone knows that the Phillies are absolutely sunk without him.
Yeah, I mean, Dombrowski said at the news conference for Archie Bradley today, asking, you know, he said, you know, if we don't get JT Realmuto, he said, we have plan Bs and plan Cs. He says, we have them lined up.
Oh, God.
He said, one thing you learn heading into a winter time in particular is that you need to be flexible and adjust from one thing to another depending upon what takes place. So we have different plans. We have different rankings of players of who may be available and who may not, and who's available from trades, who's still out there from free agency. There's nobody in free agency that you would want to sign. But so we're prepared for something we hope doesn't happen, is what Dave Dombrowski said about the catcher position. So, you know, it sounds as though like they are really putting their eggs in this basket, but that they have something else in mind, a couple of concrete options in mind in case this doesn't go down. But
maybe just some concrete, just a wheelbarrow.
Maybe some actual concrete.
Fill in the entire stadium, close it down.
Ball will hit and roll back to the pitcher. It's just as effective as having a catcher, and you don't have to pay it.
Exactly. I was gonna say, they'll create a stone slab that they'll put behind home plate where the ball will just thud, you know, instead of actually having a catcher back there.
Can I just say, I feel like it's got to be said again. I know I feel like we have, but I feel like I have to repeat. Poor Andrew Knapp. Like,
yeah, honestly,
he seems like an awesome guy.
He does.
That his teammates like. But there's no denying, and hey, he had a very solid 2020, but there's just no denying what the statistics tell you from the past like 4 years of his Phillies career. And no, you don't want him as your starting catcher. Like, no. Not even now after the solid 2020 numbers. Like, I'm sorry. If he's your catcher, you better be egregiously improving all over the rest of your roster, or just understanding, hey guys, we're not going to be a great team this year. Sorry. Well, but I just feel bad for Knapp. That's all.
I do too. No, that's definitely fair. I hope he's the backup catcher for a very long time in Philadelphia. But I did, you know, we stress the word backup catcher because, you know, we've talked about it before. I just don't think he can recapture what he did in 2020 over a full season as the everyday starter. So
I tried to get Liz to talk about that on Continued Success, and she just wasn't having that.
Well, poor Andrew Knapp, but hopefully he'll continue to make good money as a backup catcher moving forward. But we'll take our first break. When we come back, you know, we'll look at some other places around the diamond where it sounds as though the Phillies are either going to make more improvements and have already made improvements, and some other things that Dave Dombrowski said here from his news conference on Monday. That's coming up next on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we talked about JT Realmuto in the previous segment. Now I want to move on to another position of need that Dave Dombrowski has openly admitted the team needs to upgrade, and that is at shortstop. Both Jim Salisbury and Corey Seidman wrote this week that Gregorius not only is still a possibility for the Phillies, but it looks like he could be returning to the Phillies as well. And I think that it would have to be on a two-year deal. I don't think, because they didn't offer him the qualifying offer, you know, it'd be tough to bring him back on a one-year deal, I think, especially with Gregorius and the shortstop free agent market next year that we've talked a lot about. I don't think he's going to want to go into next year as a free agent trying to battle Corey Seager and Francisco Lindor and Trevor Story and Carlos Correa on the shortstop free agent market. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if Gregorius signs with someone. It's a two-year deal at this point. And I think Corey Seidman mentioned like 2 years, $30 million total, which would be $15 million a season. Totally fair for him. He made $13 million last year, so it would be a slight upgrade in pay for Didi Gregorius. But, you know, there's been that momentum building towards them getting a real shortstop. There, you know, they signed Archie Bradley to the free agent contract, a one-year deal, but absolutely a positive addition to the bullpen, and the guy who will probably start the season as their closer unless they add somebody else here this offseason. And I think one of the other things Dombrowski said at the news conference here on Monday, he was asked about this being a bridge year from 2021 to being good again in 2022. And he said, there's just too many good players on the Philadelphia Phillies baseball team to be thinking about transitioning. We're thinking about winning. I think that's a really interesting comment, and it sounds a lot different than what John Middleton was saying, and even what Dombrowski said a few weeks ago when he first came here. Well, the Phillies aren't just one player away. It sounded like they were setting the groundwork for low expectations here. So do you guys think that, Liz, do you think that Dombrowski is having an effect on John Middleton's wallet, that maybe he's convincing John Middleton that they can do a couple of things here? They can bring JT and Didi back and add Archie and maybe get another starter in here and win some baseball games in 2021?
So I read that statement and I thought, you know, I don't necessarily know what way he means that. Does he mean there are too many good players on the Phillies as currently constructed the way they are right now? Or is he actually committing to doing what it takes to bring the players back to make them good? Am I crazy for reading that two different ways?
I did not. I read it the one way. I don't think you're crazy for doing
that. I am,
but
though.
I personally
clearly
do that.
I'm clearly paranoid.
Can you say again what your two different meanings were?
Well, there are too many good players on the Philadelphia Phillies baseball team. There are players that are not on the team. Do we think that he means the players that are on the team now, or is he going to go out and get the players that we think he's talking about?
I think he's talking about the players on the team now and recognizing there's too many good players on this team to punt 2021 entirely.
Okay. Then
that's how I took it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That the idea out there that this is going to be a transition year, isn't necessarily the case because look at this team. And honestly, when we said we were going to talk about this, I thought, maybe is it fruitful at all to kind of look at this roster right now and who are the good players? Like, even just framing it as good, as broadly as that, who are the good players on this roster? Because I think we all kind of were making a similar point to this of this kind earlier in the offseason, that like this team's in a weird place because it's not really ready to blow itself up again. Fans are certainly not going to sit around and wait for them to blow up and rebuild again, but they also kind of lack a lot of the talent that teams have by the end of a rebuild to move forward. So you got to make some moves here that address the sort of uniquely frustrating area the Phillies are in. So, like, who's good on this roster? Is it Bryce Harper?
Yeah.
Didi and JT, if they come back.
But that's the thing.
Yeah, but they're not here yet.
That's what you're... Okay,
yes,
I thought you were saying, like, our arbitrary, like, guys we wanted who are good.
No,
who we're going to bring
those
back. You mean those guys.
Exactly.
I see.
Without those guys, is
gotcha.
This team as...
No.
Then him saying that... Concerned.
Is an indication that he's going to sign him. Yeah, I agree.
I hope it is. I want it to be. Because when he said that, I'm like, two of the best players from last year are not on the team. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, that's true. And you're right. The good players on this team without JT and Didi Gregorius here right now, I think you're obviously talking about Bryce Harper. In Dave Dombrowski's mind, he's probably talking about Rhys Hoskins, Alec Bohm. He's probably talking about... he might even be thinking Andrew McCutchen, although, you know, who knows what Andrew McCutchen's going to give you this year, but at least that's a guy who was a good player even as late as two seasons ago.
You know,
let's
I was looking
he's
at
not counting Andrew McCutchen.
I was looking at Kutch's numbers today, and what's interesting is that given his season-ending injury in 2019, he played about the same number of games this year as he did last year.
Yeah.
And yeah, his on-base and slugging numbers kind of plummeted by a significant number of points, and he walked about half as much as he did in 2019. Mm-hmm. But like, his batting average stayed the same, his home run totals stayed the same, his like the amount of hits he had stayed about almost exactly the same. So, you know, I don't think it's crazy to see Kutch being a key contributor on this team in 2020. But that being said, somebody who's looking at this roster right now and lumping these players into good and the alternative players, I think you probably don't count Kutch as necessarily a reliably... I don't know. I don't know how to phrase this because I don't want to say the thing that I'm trying to say.
He's not reliably good right
yeah.
now. I mean, you can't.
Still love him. I think he'll understand.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, the Phillies outfield could be bad. You know, the Bryce Harper in right field, but the center field, left field situation could be a real bad one. You know, and it might be a very much a below league offense in the outfield, even with Bryce Harper out there. But, you know, I think they also really value the top three of their starting rotation. And again, I think I'm always hesitant on, you know, making Zach Eflin the bee's knees, you know, the end all be all here. But, you know, as a number three starter on a good baseball team, we haven't seen a full consistent season from Zach Eflin to say, yes, he could be the number three starter on a playoff team. But that potential is there. And I think they see that and they've seen enough from him in the majors to believe that that's what's coming this year. So I think they see those three guys in the rotation and feel like, you know, three out of every 5 days, we've got a great chance to have a pitching advantage as far as starters are concerned. And so I think what he's basically saying there is some of the points that we've been making this offseason. There are too many good players in their primes, you know, that you're paying a lot of money to right now, to just say we can just dump this season entirely and not be competitive. I mean, you've got Bryce Harper in his prime, Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, Reese Hahn. I mean, all these guys, you know, you have some guys in their prime and some young guys who are good enough to win with now, that if you add a few pieces, you might actually be able to stay, you know, keep up with the Mets and Braves for a while. And you never know what kind of injuries are going to hit the Mets, what kind of injuries might hit the Braves, and you might be able to jump into the fray in the National League. So I think either way you look at it, Liz, it seems positive. He's either saying that, you know, we'll soon have all of these good players and make a run for it in 2021, or I think we have enough good players that it's worth investing in JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius and Archie Bradley and maybe another starting pitcher so that we can win some ball games here in 2021.
That's what I hope he means.
If you guys got the news alert tomorrow that the Phillies had re-signed Didi Gregorius and JT Realmuto and swung a deal for Anibal Sanchez, would you be at the highest positivity-wise on this team that you've been in like a full year? Like, how good is that? Because it's good news, but how good is that good news?
I think that I'd be very, very happy with Realmuto and Gregorius.
Would you be assuming nothing else would really...
I would assume that they're done. Yeah. I would assume that they're done at that point. I mean, maybe they sign another starting pitcher to a minor league deal or a cheap one-year deal, and maybe that's somebody that can help you. You know, I think if they bring back somebody like Paxton or Cole Hamels or somebody like that on a one-year deal, I'm much more interested and feeling much better about the where the franchise is going in 2021. But I do feel at least like they have... I don't know if they've held up their bargain, because they really should be going up to the luxury tax and beyond the luxury tax. There's no reason not to. But I did not expect them to re-sign JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius at the beginning of the offseason. So I would be pleasantly surprised. I would still see them as the third best team in the division. But I would at least think they have a fighting chance at the wild card if they were to do those things that you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think being this kind of team, you do wind up relying more on the misfortune and how much it will strike other teams. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that could play a huge role. But yeah, that's probably about where I am, too.
My hope is that they sign someone better than Anibal Sanchez, because when you said that, I'm just like, well, I've deducted 5 points from my excitement score.
I mean, that's what I imagine coming from some kind of starting pitching acquisition. That level of guy.
Last year he was terrible.
He was terrible.
I expect them to sign a terrible pitcher. Yes, that is. Yeah.
All right. Somebody's like, I guess somebody, I see now what you're saying.
We can give us innings. We need people who can. We need people who can give us innings, even if they're awful innings. You know, he's out there anyway.
Yep. Well, I saw him pitch in rookie league 20 years ago, and he had the keenest fastball I'd ever seen.
No, he never gave up on an at bat. Sanchez.
If you had asked me how old Anibal Sanchez was, I would have said he's got to be close to 40. He's got to be 38, 39. He's 36. Mm. He's younger than I am.
And you know what's interesting? There are some really decent left-handed options that are going to be out there, and I think that can be out there for really cheap this offseason. Like, Jay Happ is 38 or whatever. He was good last year. I don't know if you guys have looked at his numbers. He was excellent last season. You could bring him back, you know. You could bring Hamels back if he pitches well at his showcase or whatever. He's going to have an audition for teams. I mean, there are guys like Paxton out there. There's other lefties out there. I think I'd love to see them add a left-hander to this starting rotation. That would show me, too, that they're kind of serious about 2021 by adding to the starting pitching depth, because all of the pitchers around Major League Baseball pitched fewer innings last season than they ever have in their lives. Asking all of these guys to suddenly pitch 180 to 200 innings again this year might be a bit much, especially guys like Spencer Howard and Vince Velasquez, who right now are the 4 and 5 guys. And so I get why they might be interested in Anibal Sanchez, because he's always been healthy. He always pitches 160 to 180 innings, even if he's got an ERA in the high fours, low fives. But, I think they actually need to add a starting pitcher who could potentially actually help and be good.
Honestly, Hamels fits the mold of the kind of pitchers they've been acquiring this offseason, in that he needs to bounce back. He's coming back from an injury-riddled season. I would say industry across the league, he's probably known to, you know, he'd still be an effective veteran pitcher, but coming back from injury, you're not going to pay as much for him. I mean, that's right up their alley. Somebody like Hap coming off a good season.
Why would they want to do that?
I think this team stays away from that guy. Good Lord.
Why intentionally make the pitching rotation any better than it could be I've forgotten their names because I cannot stand them. No, Spencer Howard. Spencer Howard's fine. And Vince Velasquez. Like, why wouldn't they want to find someone who is at least marginally better than either of them?
Yeah, I mean, you make Spencer Howard your five, move Vince Velasquez back. And we talked about Velasquez last year positively towards the end of the season because he was perfect for that role. You know, the guy who somebody goes out for on the 10-day injured list and he makes two starts for you.
Why won't
you know?
They I mean, do that with him? Why?
They've got, well, maybe that's the idea with Anibal Sanchez, but Anibal Sanchez pitched worse than Vince Velasquez last year. So Sanchez was very good in 2019, and maybe a lot of teams are just kind of throwing away the 2020 numbers, but... You know, it's important to take 2020 with a grain of salt in some cases, but yikes.
Playing in the shallow end of the pitcher pool intentionally when they don't have to.
Right. Well, luckily there's a lot of folks in the shallow end this offseason, it would sound like. So there are other options out there. I guess the only other thing to really mention is with Archie Bradley signing in Philadelphia, did you guys see the Ric Flair sweater that he was wearing in his Zoom call today?
No.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. Yeah.
Oh, man, you want to talk about pandering.
I think this guy's... Oh, my gosh, yeah. We have to talk about this. Like,
He's got the same team as Bryce Harper, I would say, or at least, you know, some people from the coaching tree of Bryce Harper's PR team.
Or they just let him in the group chat immediately.
Seriously. Right. I mean, you want to talk about Philly being a tough place to play in. Like, yeah, he could go out there and blow two saves in a row and everybody would boo him. I think that's what we're talking about. But as far as like becoming a fan favorite before you've even thrown a pitch, good Lord, this is like he's got the Ric Flair sweater. He did a sign JT hashtag before anybody, you know, had even heard him speak. He's got a great Sean Doolittle beard. And to be honest, with the messaging we've heard him say and the kind of demeanor he put forth in that press conference, that's exactly who he was reminding me of early on. And any team would be lucky to have a Sean Doolittle before you get to the pitching component. Obviously, Archie Bradley's got some distance between him and Sean Doolittle on that front. But, you know, that's what they got him for, that there's still an effective late inning reliever in there that they think they can get out of there and stabilize the back of their bullpen. And, you know, I'm feeling confident about that too. But as far as a fan pandering component, I mean, he's nailing it. He's nailed it. He's going to be a favorite going into training camp, I think.
Well, I think one of the things I'd like to do for next week's show, and I want to open up the hitting season hotline to folks to talk a little bit about their confidence level, because it feels like, at least with the three of us, all of a sudden we're feeling more confident in the direction of this team. And of course, a lot of that has to do with Dave Dombrowski being here, but it just feels like there's a little bit more confidence in the fan base. The fan base was real, real low at the start of the offseason. And obviously, re-signing JT Realmuto will go a long way towards making people feel better. But I want folks to call in on the Hittin' Season hotline at 610-628-2115 to give us your opinion on a scale of, like we did before, 0 to 100. Well, 0 to 100 is kind of we'll do 0 to 10. That's a little bit easier for people. 10 being the most, 10 being confident in where the Phillies are headed, 0 being not confident at all. How do you feel about the direction of the Phillies right now as things stand here on Martin Luther King Day? And of course, as you're calling in during the course of the week, if things change, you know, make mention of that in your phone call. But 610-628-2115 is the Hittin' Season hotline, and we'll play back the best responses on the next episode of the podcast next week, episode 451 that we record together, Justin, Liz, and I. Let's take our last break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the rules that we know are going to be in place for the 2021 season. They're going to be a lot like last year's rules, and we'll do that coming up next year on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So Major League Baseball said this week that they're going to play 7-inning doubleheaders again this year, they're also going to have the runner on second base rule in extra innings. They're still not sure about the expanded postseason, and the designated hitter rule is still being discussed with the union. Obviously, that was used last year as a bargaining chip for some things. It would seem a no-brainer to bring it back, but it's still not for sure, and that has affected the free agent market as well. National League teams not able to go out out and get certain players because they're not sure if the designated hitter role is going to be back in play here in 2021. If memory serves, I think when the season ended last year, we talked about a lot of these rules and whether or not we liked them. I was surprised that I liked the 7-inning doubleheader rule. And while I didn't love the idea of the runner on second and extra innings rule, I think it does favor the home team way more than it does the visiting team. And I kind of like the idea of the 18, 19 inning extra inning games. It did make for a little bit more action as soon as the extra innings rolled around, which was okay. So I didn't hate that rule like I thought I would. But as we're looking ahead to 2021, guys, Justin, what do you make on where we stand with rule changes here? It sounds like 7-inning doubleheaders and the extra inning rules are definitely going to return.
Well, I think the 7-inning doubleheaders probably is something of a blessing of sorts. Like, yeah, I kind of flinch at the idea of anything short of a 9-inning game as being regulation. But if we had been sitting here all this time playing 7-inning baseball games, and this year they said they were shortening them to 5 innings during doubleheaders, you know, I think the reaction would probably be about the same. And the thing with the runners with the runner on second, I don't know. For some reason, that one stands out as a lot more unnatural to me. That feels like a setting you would turn on in a video game rather than something that's actually part of baseball. So I don't really like that. And my argument would have been it just makes it feel like baseball wants there to be less baseball. But the inning rule also kind of, in a more direct way, is less baseball because there's less of it. But in this case, it feels like when you enter extra innings and like the strategy of that the game becomes like things change and you got to maybe react a little faster, be a little more heavy handed with the roster card and saying, okay, well, I need this guy to pinch hit and then I'm going to use this guy as a pinch runner if he gets on because he's better at getting on base, but this guy's the fastest guy on the team. And you got to think like that. And there's a reason extra inning baseball can be so addictive. There's a reason we watch it and hope it goes on for so long that position players start pitching because it can turn into such entertaining chaos. And it's almost like in some games, it can feel like it's a totally different sport from the first 9 innings to the absurdity of the extra innings. So just doing something just like meddling so much, like sticking your finger into the middle of that just to be like, well, we want the games to end. We want there to be like, you know, those 2 or 3 2 a.m. finishes every season. We want there to be less of those. I don't know. I still think it just feels cheap. I guess that's what it is. It feels cheap. Feels like it's cutting a corner. And yeah, like anything that's non-threatening and just different, I'm sure I can come around to it. But you know, with the doubleheader innings, it's like, yeah, let's give these guys a break, especially in another season where they might be playing even more doubleheaders. But as far as like a runner on second, it just feels like. Somebody came up with that and they were like, okay, this works. And we can take something else away from the sport. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't like the cheapness of it.
You agree with that, Liz? Where are you at on those two rules?
I'm fine with the 7-inning doubleheader, you know, especially when stadiums are going to be, you know, when there are at least fewer people who will have to pay for a 7-inning doubleheader. They're intentionally paying for less baseball because I don't see Major League Baseball teams offering, you know, ticket for both these days. They don't do that anymore, right?
That they, for a 7-inning game, make people leave and then come back?
Well, no, like for doubleheaders, they don't usually let people stay for both, right?
I think with the 7-inning doubleheaders, you know, that's a good question. I don't think so, but that seems awfully charitable of baseball.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's it. And so I'm uncomfortable with it because people are going to pay the same price. Every game's going to be the same. If they have to, no one's going to pay less for a doubleheader. Or at least Major League Baseball.
I don't know the answer to that question. Because if these games are starting, like, and I think we saw this with doubleheader games that were like makeup doubleheaders last year, they started like 20 minutes apart from each other. Mm-hmm. Normally when you're having fans, you know, with separate tickets come in for separate games and you're basically getting two different fan groups for two different games, it's called a day, you know, that's the day night doubleheader. So you got one game starting at 1 and then the second game of the doubleheader starts at 7 or 8 or whatever. But if the reason, you know, the twi-night doubleheaders were the ones that you could pay for both games. And I think in a lot of cases last year, you had these 7-inning doubleheaders where one started about 20 minutes right after the other, and I think you get both games when you go. If somebody on Twitter can let us know the answer to that question, who would know, please do so.
Yes. Or call in.
Call in and let us know.
Yeah, or call in. No, I got to dig up the hotline number again. God like but yeah, give us a call on that hotline number I just mentioned a minute ago, and I'll give it again here in just a second when I find it.
I can continue. But, yeah. I can continue talking. Because if they do that timing again this year, then they would presumably offer – you know, the 2-for-1. But that was last year they were trying to play, you know, like 60 games or however many it was in a limited amount of time. And they really didn't mm-hmm. want to go over that. So I feel like this year they might space them farther apart because they probably won't they won't have to play as many as of them. If they do, they're going to be planned ahead of time. So I mean that's one issue for me personally with the doubleheaders. If people are going to be expected to pay for both games, they're paying for less baseball, and that is terrible. I really hate that, and I don't feel like anybody has really examined it from that perspective because there really weren't fans last year.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There were no fans last year,
so
that's
talking
exactly
about
right.
What they did last year, and nobody knows. Like, if they're going to, if they keep the 7-inning rule for this year, what are they? I'm eager to know.
What are they going
to
do with fans?
What the timing is going to be, and what the expectations are going to be of fans, and whether or not they're going to price those games lower because it's intentionally 7 innings of baseball. As a concept, I have no problem with it because you got to get 2 games in a day. Baseball is hard on the guys. Just get it all out of the way. You know, I understand. I
think the deal here is they did this 7-inning doubleheader for, like you mentioned, COVID reasons, and it didn't matter because there were no fans mm-hmm. in the stands. So I was going to give out the number, but obviously nobody listening went to baseball games last year and could tell us from experience. So
we don't need the number.
My guess. Right, I guess exactly. So I guess the thing is with the 7-inning doubleheader rule is that it's probably only going to remain in place as long as COVID is a thing.
We'll find
out. My guess is that, you know, when they go back to fans in the stands, you're right, Liz. They can't expect fans, at least if they're not going to offer the tickets on a discount. Like if you're going to sell a fan a ticket to a 7-inning game, there better be a discount on it.
We should watch out though, because
keep an eye. Yeah,
going backwards, adding more baseball. How could they? Yeah. I don't see. They now have fans, presumably paying the same amount of money, you know, for a 9-inning game as a 7-inning game.
Well, I mean, I think you're right.
Less resources all around. Yeah. They're going to save money. I can't imagine them adding that back in.
Well, it might be part of any negotiation with collective bargaining or something, because I would imagine players would rather. Well, I mean, you know, maybe that's a split difference between players. I mean, I can imagine there'd be some who would want those extra innings, especially back of the bullpen guys or middle relievers who have incentives in their contract for appearances or certain statistics or whatever. But it also is easier on the players not to have to play 18 innings and have to only play 14 innings. It'll be interesting. You're right. I didn't think about it that way. My main objection to the 7-inning doubleheader is, and I'm surprised we didn't see this last year, a lot of abbreviated, like, no-hitters and stuff like that, that you'd look back and like, man, why were there so many no-hitters in 2021? Well, 5 of them happened in 7-inning games. You know, we didn't see that last year, so maybe that's overblown. But with these rules, there are always the unintended consequences. And I think we just kind of outlined a couple of them right there. That's interesting. I didn't think about the ticket thing is very interesting. We'll have to see whether or not that's a thing when people are actually allowed back into the stadium. So
I'd like baseball to just rebrand and try to make the owners the superstars of the game. I feel like they kind of want to do that. I don't think it would work, but I want to see what their ham-fisted attempt in doing so would look like. I feel like that it feels just like they're trending in that direction because much is revealed to be for the owners. So why not just have the owners be the faces of baseball and see if that gets people excited?
Like a Steve Cohen parka that you could buy in the Met store. Yeah, yeah, that he wears in his Zoom calls. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. What Met fan wouldn't buy that right now, right?
Honestly, a free bag of money.
They're in love with Steve Cohen.
I mean, I could get a John Middleton salmon-colored button-down shirt with the Phillies logo on it.
And then set it on fire.
You can get an air horn prop to hold up the way he did for photos, right. But it doesn't work. That's non-functional.
That's the sad part of the whole thing.
It's the metaphor, yeah.
I got it. All right, let's do our final thoughts here as we wrap up episode number 449 of the podcast. Justin, any final thoughts from you as we finish up?
You know, the sun was shining this weekend. It wasn't bitter cold. And I dare say, I feel like we feel better about this team than we have in months. I don't know how long that will last, but it's nice to feel it again. And I would just say that as, you know, spring's not necessarily close, but it's on the horizon after the Super Bowl. We'll all be looking ahead to baseball in whatever form the season's going to have. And hopefully, you know, long time between then and now, hopefully we can maintain some level of positivity about this team moving forward. But if we can't, don't worry. You'll hear about it on this or any of our other podcasts.
That's exactly right. How about you, Liz? Any final thoughts from you?
I mean, I pretty much agree with Justin, except with the weather here in Ohio has been steely gray sky for days on end. So I'm not feeling any happy feelings about from the weather. But I am feeling better about the Phillies than I have in a while. And it is a nice feeling. And I would love for my brain to stop asking me, how are they going to screw this up?
I wonder how much of our reputation as negative Nancys is caused by the fact that Liz lives in Ohio. I wonder what will happen
it's
when
heavily,
Liz doesn't
it's heavily
live in
weighed.
Ohio anymore.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out, too. I can't wait. Maybe it'll change my whole personality. Who knows? Who knows? When it happens, we'll all find out together, and I'm so excited for that day.
At least you're not a Reds or Cleveland fan.
That's right.
In that, you know, you've had to watch them tear apart the promising parts of your teams in the state of Ohio.
Yes.
So
That's right.
Did anybody else see John Heyman talk about a team being a contender? And I'm trying to remember, and it was absolutely laughable. It was the Reds.
I
know,
but it doesn't surprise
me. It's the
me
Reds.
To hear
he
that.
Was talking about, you know, the Reds think they could compete with their roster as it is now.
Yeah, it's always great.
I fell over.
When you see a John Heyman tweet getting circulated like that, there's always some little note in there that's just like, this team wants you to make sure people think they're this or that this player is this. And sometimes, yeah, it's just, it's the best. It's very comical.
So I'm definitely glad
I'm not a Reds fan.
Well, we are glad we're not Reds fans or Cleveland fans right now because it's the Phillies. There is, again, a little bit more optimism right now if you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan, which is nice, especially as the football team implodes before our very eyes. And so let us know. Seriously, give us a call on the Hit and Season hotline. It's 610-628-2115. On a scale of 1 to 10, how are you feeling positively or negatively about the team? 10, of course, more positive, 0, of course, least positive about the team. 610-628-2115, as it looks like some momentum is gathering towards the Phillies actually bringing in some people that we've seen before and come to know and love that can actually help this team win some baseball games in 2021. That's going to do it for this edition of Hit and Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz once again for joining me on Hit and Season. And again, don't forget to check out that Hit and Season hotline, 610-628-2115. Check out the Hit and Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/hit and season. And tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed, Hit and Season, Continued Success, The Dirty Inning, all of it by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, having them subscribe, download, rate, and review podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hit and Season.